26 minutes past 10 o'clock on a Friday morning with Spandau Ballet fading into obscurity. It is now opportunity time for me to welcome to the studio Victor Snyders, who's no stranger here. And I mentioned at the beginning of the show that I'd be inviting him to expand a little bit because he's a very, very well-established entrepreneur and, he's a kind of thought guru as well. Big articles now on LinkedIn, regular articles on LinkedIn. He does a podcast with us. And occasionally when he's in town, he pops in for a chat. So, Victor, welcome again.
Hi, Dave. Wonderful to see you. It's like coming home to my family. This is one of the most welcoming places I ever appear at.
Well, it's wonderful that we can share in the opportunity to tap your knowledge because this is what makes a lot of sense in the business world when you talk to entrepreneurs that have climbed the mountain, that have faced the demons, come out relatively unscathed on the other side to share the wisdom that has been acquired along the way. And that's really what I wanted to chat to you about today, was the kind of business of business, not necessarily the specifics, but the journey. And it's a fascinating opportunity to talk about things like, for example, the single biggest turning point in your business journey with Skin Renewal so far. What was the, every business has, or every businessman has a moment. And sometimes it's a almost like a Damascene moment. Sometimes it's a progression, but everyone has one.
You know, you're quite right. There are so many little things, and I think it's more an accumulation. It was interesting the words you used at the beginning there, where you said you wanted me to share my knowledge. My knowledge is very limited. My experience, however, is extensive. And rather than share knowledge, which on the face of it appears to be something which is absolute, you know, this is the knowledge. A British cab driver, when he has to pass the test to be a cab driver in London, has to pass the test, which is called the knowledge. And they write the knowledge. It takes them 3 years to study for it because they have to know every single road in London, which is a big job. And it's the knowledge. And it's a very proud thing, but it's either right or it's wrong. And the knowledge is everything that's right. I don't know everything that's right. By no means, but I can tell you a lot of things that are wrong.
is this by trial and error?
You know, life is trial and error. It's like going on a date. You think the date went really well, and she doesn't think the date went too well. And clearly, you did something wrong, and you've got to try and figure out what you did wrong so that you get a better result out of it. Mistakes are one of the greatest gifts we can have in business. Because the ability to, but for me, one of the biggest changes and is not falling in love with your own ideas and concepts. Because very often we come up with an idea of something we want to do or we want to achieve, and then we are so determined that that idea must be right that we push it and push it and push it, and we will not accept that it doesn't work. Not every idea is a good idea, but you have to find out that it's not a good idea. But if you fall in love with the idea and it's not possible to execute it, you keep trying to push it.
I think from a business perspective, if you are able to separate yourself a little bit from the stoic face and take a bird's eye view, one can then see more clearly what is happening, what is working, what isn't. But for many business folk and entrepreneurs, I'm talking more about the SMME sector probably, because they're so desperately caught up in the struggles of keeping a business going in an economy that isn't exactly firing, that you just don't have an opportunity to step back and take a look.
So, and the SME sector is really the sector that I understand and I love playing in. I've been in the major corporate sector and it wasn't for me. I love the freedom that the SME area gives you. But a very important realization that happened quite early on was differentiating between owning a business and running a business. Owning a business is an investment decision. If you invest in a business as a shareholder, you're investing for one of two reasons. or maybe one of three. You either want to generate dividends, a return on your investment, or you want to generate capital growth so that the investment becomes more over time, or you're a philanthropist and it's all altruistic. So those are the only reasons as a shareholder to invest in a business. And as the person who invests in the business, the only say you have is at the annual board meeting where you can vote on who's going to run the business for you. So now you're the investor, the shareholder. Point two, you run the business. You are firstly, you are an employee of the business. You earn a salary. The business is not your piggy bank. You have a responsibility to the business and to the shareholders, who happens to be you as well. But you need to decide every time you open your mouth, are you speaking as a shareholder or are you speaking as the person who's doing a job running the business?
I years ago was in business with a couple of guys who taught me a lot about business and life. In particular, the idea that when you start a business, there are two ways to run it. One is you live off it, and the other is to sell it. I mean, that's maybe a simplified version of what you were talking about. But in their very simple analogy for me was, if you're going to live off your business, then you put as much through the company as you possibly can to enjoy the benefit of what you're doing. Whereas if you're going to sell a business and you've been living off it and it looks terrible on the books, it's maybe not a good idea.
Yeah, I think you can do both. So the 21 years of Skin Renewal, I've been an employee. I get a salary. That salary is determined by market conditions. What would I have to pay someone else to do the job that I do? And for that, I get a salary. And with the salary comes responsibility. I have to be at the business so many hours a day. I have responsibilities to the staff, to the operations, whatever. And remember, the fundamental, very few directors of a company go and read up what are the fiduciary duties of a director of a business. Because when you run a business as a director, you can be a shareholder without being a director. But if you're a director of a business, you have a fiduciary duty. That workplace must be safe. It must be ethical. You have a responsibility to your employees. You have a responsibility to the shareholders as well. But you need to carry all of those things out. And for that, you receive a salary. Learn to live on your salary.
Sometimes tough when you look at the way the world is operating. And Gayton McKenzie will explain to you that 30 million is not a lot of money in the scheme of, look what I'm doing for the country. You're worried about me spending 30 million on a junket. Go and look at what they, and suddenly money and status and operational oversight, etc., kind of blurs everything. And ultimately, I own this business. I can do with it as I want. It's a very different approach, really, if you're in an entrepreneurial sector where you actually do show responsibility and care. Jurisprudence, I think, is the word.
Yeah.
For everyone that works in the company and everyone that benefits and has invested in. And then, of course, your customers.
Yeah.
Are you doing what you're doing for best practice across the board? Politics doesn't teach us that at all.
Yeah. You know, as it happens, we now have a medical business. And because of the ethics that are involved in the medical profession, our first responsibility is to our patients above everything else, above making money, above doing, we have to look after our patients. There's the duty of care.
Which is something that I wanted to ask you about, because you clearly alluded to at the beginning of our chat that you come from a broader sector, the corporate world, and you were in property development, and it's a completely different business, probably driven largely by the balance sheet and the responsibility to shareholders. Then you got into this business, which is it's not a kind of heartless medical, you know, switch on the machine, switch off the machine. If you make it, you make it. If you don't, you know, no one cares. Your business is aesthetics, is making people better versions of themselves, and they ultimately become your champions or not. So you're tremendously dependent on the goodwill that you generate from what you do across the board.
Absolutely.
Why did you go into this kind of business, which is probably one of the toughest?
Well, most crazy things that men do, there's a woman behind it for some reason or another. And I met Dr. Maureen. We were both single in our mid-40s. We met, we started dating, and it just happened. And she needed someone to do this. And
so she was good at the medical, technical stuff.
Oh, she's a genius.
But business sometimes doesn't necessarily come automatically. When you're good at what you do and you do it well, maybe the business of the business is something that you need an expert to come in.
Our accounting system, or her accounting system, was a cardboard box into which invoices and bits of paper went. And that was the accounting system. And then the box got handed to someone, and he was expected to tell you how much VAT you had to pay the receiver the next day. Yeah. And he had to sort through that. So different people are good at different things. Doctors are exceptionally good at doing what they do. They haven't been trained. They don't have the background in business. In the same way, I have a very good background in business. But when it comes to actual medicine, I defer to Maureen because...
But it's a combination, it's a partnership that therefore works extraordinarily well, because you have areas of expertise and then a crossover interest that bisects and it comes together.
And you know, Bill, going into this, if Maureen had said to me 21, 22 years ago, do this, and in 22 years' time, this will be the business, I probably wouldn't have taken it on, because that's a very long-term commitment. It just happened. And it was something that suddenly we saw had potential and could grow, and we were both passionate about, and it took on a life of its own.
And we're going to take a little musical interlude while you think about the next question I'm going to ask you, and that is, what is the biggest mistake you've made in business and what you learned from it? So get ready for this one, folks, on the flip side of Bob Dylan.
They sat together in the park as the evening sky grew dark. She looked at him and he felt a spark tingle to his bones. 'Twas then he felt alone and wished that he'd gone straight and watched out for a simple twist of fate. They walked along by the old canal, a little confused, I remember well, and stopped into a strange hotel with a neon burning bright. He felt the heat of the night hit him like a freight train moving with a simple twist of fate. A saxophone someplace far off played as she was walking on by the arcade, as the light bust through a beat-up shade where he was waking up. She dropped a coin into the cup of a blind man at the gate and forgot about a simple twist of fate. Room was bare, he didn't see her anywhere. He told himself he didn't care, pushed the window open wide, felt that emptiness inside to which he just could not relate. by a simple twist of fate. He hears the ticking of the clocks and walks along with a parrot that talks. Hunts her down by the waterfront docks where the sailors all come in. Maybe she'll pick him out again. How long must he wait? One more time for a simple twist of fate. People tell me it's a sin to know and feel too much within. I still believe she was my twin, but I lost the ring. She was born in spring, but I was born too late. Blame it on this simple twist of fate.
Bob Dylan's Simple Twist of Fate. Ah, yeah. Bob Dylan, evergreen, like my guest, Victor Snyders, on the Dave Charles Show, brought to you proudly by Bidvest McCarthy Toyota Bolito on a Friday morning. We're talking business. We're talking business with a man who has achieved an awful lot in a career that is, I think, probably looking at you, Victor, the best is yet to come, but you've traveled a journey. And Skin Renewal has started off as a small business. It's grown into one of the biggest aesthetic operations, I think, in the country, if not the biggest. Certainly one of the most well-established, and the brand speaks for itself. But mistakes are part, you alluded to the fact earlier when we were chatting, don't be afraid of mistakes. That's the, you learn from them. What has been the biggest mistake that you've made in business that you've learned from?
Resisting change.
Do elaborate.
The reality is that we live in an economy and a world that is changing unbelievably fast. And the rate at which it's changing is even more. You know, you and I come from a very similar generation, and we think back to when we first got jobs in the 1970s and the 1980s. There was no such thing as a fax machine. There was no such thing as a cell phone, a mobile phone. We didn't have computers in our businesses.
How did we cope?
Incredibly well.
I just think about it now. It seems impossible.
But the reality is that our environments are always changing. Just look at South Africa and the changes that have happened in South Africa in my lifetime, from 1958 until 2026. The changes are immense, and you have to go with the changes. Resisting changes blocks your business. You have to be prepared to evolve. Just because something worked yesterday doesn't mean it's going to work tomorrow. It might, but you need to not resist change. You need to go with it.
There is, of course, the fear, because you know what you know, because it's comfortable, it's working, and the change that is coming is unknown. And fear of the unknown is fundamental, I think, to the human experience. So we resist it. Naturally, we resist it.
Well, the two of the greatest emotions that drive human behavior of fear and anger. And the natural response to fear is to step away from it. The natural response to anger is to immerse yourself in it. What we actually need to learn, and it takes a fairly concentrated change in your own behavior, is when you have fear, approach it. And when you have anger, step away from it, which is the exact opposite.
Wow. That's a little bit like transactional analysis, which I suppose, for one familiar with these terms, it's a bit of old hat, but it's absolutely, I think, fundamental to understanding human nature. If you have these natural responses that are going to ultimately, you know, you'll survive fight or flight situation, but in business, it's not going to end well.
So when you've got this fear of change, that doesn't mean go and immerse yourself. The words I used were approach it. Okay, so
get to know it, get to understand it.
Get to know it, get to understand. Get to understand what is your fear. Quantify your fear. What is my fear? Is my fear that I could lose money? Is it my fear that I could lose status? Is this going to, what would be the repercussions of this not working? What are the things that would cause it not to work?
It's interesting because when you look at it that way and you unpack it, it's not as frightening.
Absolutely. And then by approaching it, you can decide, okay, this is something I'm not going to do because I've now quantified it and the risk is not worth the reward.
Wow.
Or is the reward worth the risk?
And similarly with anger. Instead of creating a situation that's going to explode, you diffuse it by stepping back, taking a moment.
Anger is an unbelievably powerful emotion. It can be hugely destructive, but it can be hugely constructive if used correctly. Hence the term righteous anger.
Ah.
When you use the anger to drive you instead of just reacting, you can use anger very, very powerfully because it's a very strong motivating factor. The adrenaline is flowing. You're wired. You can achieve things. But you need to be directed because if you're not directed, that anger could become very destructive.
So what was the change that you resisted?
It's just my life changed as well. I went from being a single student, to being married, to having kids, to getting divorced, to being single again. These are changes. And I remember after the divorce, when I'd resettled my family back, or I'd resettled the family into Australia, which is where my ex wanted to go to. And I came back and I looked at my life and I said, okay, I'm 45 years old. I've ticked all the boxes that I was supposed to have ticked. I went to school, I went to university, I did my national service, met a girl, got married, had children, bought a house.
That was the playbook and it didn't pan out.
Got two dogs, got a swimming pool, got the second car, built the garage, got a better house. I ticked every box that I was supposed to tick. Why am I not happy? And how has this landed up in this total debacle where essentially, I'm now estranged from my kids due to distance. What do I need to do differently, or am I going to simply repeat? So I needed to become a different person. So I had to change. But it's in the same way with a business. A business needs to evolve. The needs of its customers, the technology that is available to it, is always shifting. We're currently faced with AI. It's on everyone's lips. What is the effect of AI going to be? Now, I can bury my head in the sand and pretend it isn't there, or I can just jump in and throw everything at AI and get onto the bandwagon, or I can analyze it and say, how is this something we are going to use in our business? What is the potential downside? What is the potential upside? And really assess it to try and use it in a way that will help the business. That doesn't mean I embrace it, but you've got to work with it and you've got to be prepared to change to get the benefits that come out of it.
And if you were to start over today, with no money, no contacts, it's just the aliens have landed, everything is gone, you're starting again. what would you do first?
I would do exactly what I've done for the last 68 years. I would rerun my life the way it has been. Reason is this. If I want to change something in my past that I say I would have done differently, I would not be where I am today.
So you would repeat all of the mistakes?
Absolutely.
You would do it again?
Absolutely. So there were two lovely movies that I used to illustrate this fact. The one was called The Butterfly Effect, and the other one was called Sliding Doors. So The Butterfly Effect was Richard Gere, and he had a situation in which he dies. And he goes up to heaven, and he gets given the option of treating the circumstances differently in order to carry on living and not die. So off he goes. And he changes what he does does not die in that altercation and his life goes on in a particular way. But it's a very, very interesting movie because just because you change certain things doesn't mean the ultimate outcome completely changes. Sliding Doors, which was another great movie, was about a guy who was running to catch a train. And as he gets to the train, the doors close and the train leaves without him. And his life carries on. Then they play the alternative. He just manages to get on the train and the doors close behind him and he goes off on the train. His life takes two entirely different lines because he meets different people and whatever. And if you want to change something in the past, you would not be in the present. All that means is I'm not happy where I am right now. And for that, you can only take your own responsibility. Learn from the mistakes, but the mistakes is what taught you. Had you not made the mistake, you wouldn't have learned the lesson.
That's absolutely. So now you've got into a situation where you have habits and routine and success as a result of sticking to it. What are those daily habits and routines that you, your mantra that you swear by?
So I get to sleep early. I don't drink coffee past about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm virtually a teetotaler. Getting to bed early on a light meal, not a heavy meal, and I'm up generally at about 4:30. The 4:30 to 6:30 is the me time. It's the time where I can get my life in order, get the stuff done that I need to have cleared. I've cleared my emails, I've cleared my WhatsApps, I've planned my day, I've thought about it, and then off we go to work and we'll see what happens.
Have you always lived your life like this? Or
no.
Is this?
No, I was exactly the opposite. I used to get to bed at 2 in the morning, battle to wake up, generally had too much alcohol in me when I went to sleep anyway, was always stressed. One of the things that I discovered, and this was really thanks to Dr. Maureen, was that one of the foundations of good health is sleep. If your sleep is right and your sleep is deep and it's refreshing and it's regenerative, you're able to function so much better. And if you fix your sleep patterns, many other things just start falling into place. And I just shifted my lifestyle completely, and it had a huge impact.
It's extraordinary. So no medication?
No.
It's just healthy living.
But the only time I'll take something to sleep is on a plane, just so that the external factors aren't keeping me awake and that it actually knocks me out. Other than that, I won't take a sleeping tab and virtually no medication.
Well, let's take another musical interlude and we'll be back with my special guest, Victor Snyders, on the flip side of Sophie Ellis-Bextor's Murder on the Dance Floor.
It's murder on the dance floor. You better not kill the groove, DJ. Gonna burn this goddamn house right down. Oh, I know about your kind. And so I'll have to play. You better not steal the moon. I'm not afraid to die.
Sophie Ellis-Bextor's Murder on the Dance Floor. 3 minutes to 11 on a Friday. My very special guest with me in the studio, Victor Snyders from Skin Renewal Institute. We've been talking about business and particularly about Victor's approach to business, because it goes without saying that most successful businesses, I think all successful businesses, have a vision and a visionary and someone that keeps things going despite the threats and the vagaries of life, as COVID and unrest and economy and politics and all sorts of slings and arrows, and to stay the course, this is the trick. But Victor, if there was one piece of advice that you wish someone had given you when you started, what would that be?
Stop chasing happiness.
Oh, but isn't that the essence of everything?
So here's my philosophy on it. Once again, as I often say, Dave, these are things that have worked for me. That doesn't make them right. They're just simply my opinions and things that have worked for me in my life. Happiness is generally something which is quantified.
And it's fleeting.
And the goalposts move. When I achieve this, I'll be happy. Now I need to achieve something else to be happy. Now I need to buy a new car to be happy. Now I need to do this to be happy. You keep moving the goalposts. And you're chasing something that constantly shifts. And you're just swapping one aim for another. When I learned to stand, and very often this is linked to money. Because success, most people measure in rands or in profit or in affluence. That means they're successful. What I decided quite a few years back was to settle for contentment. What is enough?
Wow.
What allows me just to be content? Satisfied with life without having to aim to achieve things or prove myself to anyone or to become something, to aspire to other people's admiration or awards or anything. For instance, business awards. We never enter a business competition about the best this or the best that, because we don't aspire to be the best. We only aspire to be the best that we can be. What other people do is what other people do. Let them get on with it. As long as I can be content in doing what I do. So one of the tricks I use on this, I call it earning my sleep. Before I go to sleep, I do a very quick recap on the day. And I go through the main things that happened during the course of that day and say, was I the best version of myself that I could be in all those circumstances? And if the answer is yes, then I've earned my sleep. And I go to sleep and sleep the sleep of the innocent. If, however, I say, that was not a very good thing I did. I didn't recognize someone, or I spoke to someone badly, or I went outside of my own code of ethics in doing something, then I know I've got to fix something. Park that for tomorrow morning, but that's something I'm going to have to deal with. And when all you're looking for is contentment, it's peaceful. The happiness is an up and down and up and down. Contentment is just so much easier.
Wow. And we've been talking fairly abstract philosophy about business, but now just to consolidate it and to focus, Skin Renewal as a business, for those that are not necessarily familiar with the brand, how would you describe it?
When we started the business, we sat down, and I may have told you the story before. It was about 8 or 9 years before Simon Sinek wrote the book Why, which has been one of my Bible books for business. And thankfully, I had a very wise person who said to me, if you're going to get involved in this business, you need to establish your why. If the answer is to make money, there are a lot easier ways to make money and lots of different ways. So that is not your why. That is not your purpose. You need to find something which is at a higher level as to why you are doing this. Then You need to make money in order to do that. Money becomes secondary. It's still vitally important because without money, you've got to stop doing what you want to do. And then your why has to disappear. So our why was we wanted to transform lives. It was that simple. You know, Churchill once said, "I'm sorry I wrote you such a long letter. I didn't have time to write a short one." It's far more difficult to encapsulate. I laugh when I see companies with mission statements that run to a page. A mission statement should be no more than 3 or 4 words. So our why is we transform lives. Now, it's a two-pronged sword because it's not only transforming the lives of the patients that we see, but it's transforming the lives of everyone that we come into contact with, including our staff, our suppliers, whatever. Our job is to transform lives. If we can let everyone who comes into contact with us be just 1% better off than they were before they met us, by sharing knowledge, by smiling, by whatever it is that we do, that's what we do. That's what we get a kick out of. When someone recently asked me, "What is the thing I'm most proud of in the 21 years that we had skin renewal?" The answer is we had 92 babies born in the company. I've got, I think, 25 people that have been with us more than 15 years and nearly 100 people that have been with us for more than 10 years. I have people that joined us as 19-year-old, 20-year-old, straight out of college. I've watched them grow. I've watched them become parents. I've watched them have kids. I've watched them buy their first car, buy their first house. The reward in that and in seeing the growth in these people has been, for me, one of the most rewarding things. That it's something that we help to create.
Oh, that's fascinating. So it's not only looking after your customers, it's looking after your team.
Oh, Branson said, if you look after your staff, then looking after your customers becomes very easy. Because if they feel looked after, they will look after the customers. Look after your staff first. It's what we did with COVID. No retrenchments. We looked after the staff. We didn't look after the banks or the insurance companies or the suppliers or the landlords. We looked after our staff. That's where we placed our priority. And it was repaid exponentially once COVID lifted, because the staff, every single one of them, felt valued.
And clearly, that is a recipe for success. But your customers ultimately are the ones that keep you in business.
So there's two aspects to customers. Number one is the result, and number two is how you made them feel. Because people will always remember how you made them feel. So creating an experience, that's something I'm very involved in, is creating the experience of connecting with us. I have no control over the result side. That's why the genius Dr. Maureen is behind that end, because she understands the entire medical side of it. Now, she looks after the results, how the therapists, how the doctors are trained, how everyone is trained to do a particular thing to get a particular result. And that changes all the time. And, you know, working with Maureen, for me, it's amazing, because she's been doing this for 30 years. By anyone's categorization, she could be called an expert. Okay, she's done her dues. She's injected 500,000 people. She's seen hundreds of thousands of patients. There's not one day that Maureen wakes up thinking she knows it all. Every day, she's looking at something new, something different. And what can I learn today?
But because technology continues to produce miracles and wonders in this
and
modern
science,
age. Yeah.
Things that change, things that we thought were healthy, which turn out not to be that healthy.
Ah, well, there's the thing. But currently, your best practice is, you say, making people the better versions of themselves. We have a desire, as the vain creatures that we are, to look good, to feel good. I use the word vanity, but it shouldn't really be used glibly, because it's more than that. I think that it's fair to say that to succeed in the modern epoch, You have to look good. You have to be at the top of your game. Otherwise, you're not taken seriously. You're not employable. You're not going to be closing deals. You're not going to be dry. You know, even heaven forbid, those that lead countries try their best to look the part.
So as human beings, we take our cue of how we feel about ourselves from how other people react towards us. We take external cues to establish self-worth. If someone says, you're looking great, okay, I like you, then we like ourselves, and then we feel like we feel good.
Yeah.
Okay. If people are critical of us, then we're critical of ourselves. So we take our cues that way. So the externalization of how you look is something.
So
let's use a simple thing. Dave, you're going on the first date with a girl that you really fancied, and you finally managed to crack the nod for a first date. When you go on that first date, man, you are going to be on your game. You're going to be dressed right. You're going to smell right. Your hair is going to be right. Your clothing is going to be right. Your corsage, your flowers, the entire thing. You're going to be on your game. Okay? In the hope that she likes you. In which case, you'll feel good about yourself. But you're going to give it everything. You don't go there wearing an old pair of tackies, okay, wearing yesterday's underwear, half drunk with your hair tousled, and expect her to like you. So if you go for a job interview, do you prepare yourself for the job interview, or do you just walk in off the beach for the job interview? You present yourself. It's the way we are, because we expect that when we look a particular way and we have taken care in how we look, that people will respond favorably towards us. So understanding the psychology in this, I cannot make someone feel more confident. But what I can do is put them in a position to project in a way that the other people let them feel more confident about themselves.
So it's much more than just aesthetic, the beauty, the visual image.
It's more psychology, marriage counselor, life coach.
So literally it is. It's therapy.
Absolutely.
It's therapy for the soul. That you're creating well, it's a full service, isn't it, really?
It has to be.
And that's why it's so successful. You talk about the experience and result, and yeah, clearly both are important.
But we do it not because we want the patient to applaud us. We do it because that's what we are. That is our why.
It just happens to coincide very beautifully with what everyone is looking for.
It's instinctive.
Yeah. And you've managed to capitalize on that requirement for love and acceptance and respect and recognition and status and all of the good things that Maslow so succinctly put in his pyramid of needs and wants. And there it is. The basis of an unbelievably good business is giving people what we absolutely fundamentally desire, need, want, for a happier, more fulfilling life. For the fortunate that can afford to treat themselves to the grooming that gives the results, this happens to be a recipe, if you like, for success. And it's available in certain areas in the country. Whereabout is Skin Renewal now practicing?
So there are 20 clinics at the moment, 7 in Cape Town, soon to be 8. We open our 8th Cape Town clinic in October. 7 in Joburg, 3 in Pretoria, 3 in KZN. So that's where it is at the moment. It's a particular business model where the interdependency of clinics is critical. So to go and put a clinic all out on its own in Nelspruit or in Polokwane as a business model does not work for us. We would need to create a different business model to do that. So we've had to stick to the 3 major metropolitan areas. Our clinics, to use an analogy, hunt in a pack. They support each other in terms of stock, staff, equipment, whatever. The economics of running a business requires that there are 3 clinics that become self-supporting. So 3 really for us is a critical number in any region.
Clearly it's working well. Are there plans to expand?
Dave, I don't know. And you know what? It doesn't matter. If the right opportunity comes at the right time, when we've got cash in the bank that is in a location that I believe will work, that we have the capacity, that the equipment is available, and the stars align, we'll grow. And if we don't, that's also okay.
So you're trusting in the process.
Yeah. This is the difference between being a private company and being a listed company. The moment you're listed, you have to show growth every single year. I don't. The reality is that economies don't grow on a consistent basis. They grow in spurts.
Ah.
They go up, they go down, they stay level for a while, and we go with the flow of what is happening. We're not dictated to by external shareholders who say, well, last year I got a 7% return and this year I'm getting a 5% return. Your company's doing worse. In comparison to what? To the previous year.
So your measure of success is how your customers feel and do they keep coming back?
So once again, I quote a Simon Sinek book. And it was a book I very fortunately read the week before COVID. It was called The Infinite Game. And in life, there are two kinds of games. There's the finite game. Most games we know are finite games. They have a set of rules. They have a set of competitors. You know who's playing. They have a beginning and they have an end. And at the end, there is a winner. Virtually every sport is played that way. Then there is the infinite game. The infinite game, there are no rules. You don't know who's playing. There is no beginning. There is no end. The only objective is to keep playing.
Wow. That's a magnificent...
You don't need to be number one or number two or better than last year. You just need to be in the game again and again and again. And when you change your philosophy to one, and it's not just of survival, but looking very long term, it becomes very different because you're not chasing benchmarks.
Playing the game.
Play the infinite game.
Keep on playing. Wow, I love that thought. A lovely thought to end our conversation with Victor. I look forward to the next conversation with Victor Snyder, my very special guest from Skin Renewal. And Victor, for those that are wanting to tap into your podcasts and your thought generating initiative on LinkedIn, how does one find you?
Well, on LinkedIn, just put my name in.
Victor Snyder's and it comes up.
Yeah. Yep. And I'm doing a series of articles, one every week. We've got 40 chapters completed, but we've only published the first four. They 200-300 word articles, just on ideas and thoughts that have crept along. So there's that. And then our business is really through our website, Skin Renewal COSA, which connects to all of our social media. We have YouTube channels, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, all the social media channels. People can sign up for newsletters.
Keeping the information fresh and flowing.
Yeah. And we have a good following, probably around 750,000 people that follow our social media. That doesn't mean they're all patients or customers, but sure. That's also okay.
But it's good stuff. It's life-affirming, and certainly you've built a business based on principles that apply across the board. So I thank you for spending the time this morning.
Greatest of
pleasure,
and
I look forward to reconnecting really soon. My very special guest,
Fantastic.
Victor Snyder
Thanks
from Skin
me.
Renewal, and the Dave Charles Show continues.